All right, ladies and gentlemen around the Delaware Valley, on a, I'd say, beautiful day. It's always a beautiful day when we're doing Take Charge with Paula Robinson here on WWDB. We've got a fantastic show. Great day in the Delaware Valley. Miriam Barish is here. Great to see you, Miriam.
Good to see you, Joe.
It's by the way, Miriam is not a stranger to the broadcast. And
regular.
You know, that's right. And certainly, Paula, how are you?
I'm good. You know, very good.
And by the way, just a quick question. Who's this guy to the right? I need to know who
Drew.
He is. Because I'm getting it. Is that Drew Walker?
Yes, it is.
I'm a little nervous. I know he's got that ankle bracelet. He's got, but we have two lawyers on, so you're good. And of course, we got TJ in the producer's room. And he, along with, they know each other really well. They also have to be back to the asylum by, what's that, 15? Just having some fun. You know, TJ's got the button. Okay, so I'll be muted if I mess with him. So, but listen, we have a great show. Drew Walker, thanks for putting it together.
Thank you.
And certainly, you know, lots to talk about. Miriam, if you would tell our listeners a little bit, remind them a little bit about yourself and
sure. The
firm.
So I am a shareholder at Anna Paul Weiss. We are a personal injury law firm. We exclusively represent people who have been harmed by dangerous and defective products or the negligence of others in a variety of situations. I have been there for 25 years.
And wait a minute.
Yeah.
There's
no
chance. Since
at
you were 7 years old.
I was 17 when I started.
Since she was 11 years old. Pushing it. Awesome.
And we take a lot of pride in being able to help people sometimes when they find themselves at their worst.
Yeah.
So it's work that you can really find meaningful and rewarding, and, you know, you're really helping people. And I always say, not only are we helping the client at issue, I always feel like the work we do in some part can make the world a better and safer place.
Well, it's funny you say that, because that's the change happens in the courtroom. We've talked about it before.
Unfortunately, it seems without the courtroom, I know people like to dislike lawyers, but we are the agents of change.
Well, it's interesting that you say that. Every time, my next door neighbor's a contractor, and every time I hear the trucks pull up with the beep, 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 I know that it was a lawyer that created that situation, so that, because I'm sure it was a catastrophic injury where a truck backed up and something not good happened.
It's so true. Yeah, and so unfortunately, in our society sometimes we don't have people or manufacturers and corporations that are self-policing. So as attorneys, sometimes we just become the police. It is our actions that holding people accountable for their reckless or negligent conduct, and one of our clients is harmed. We can't put Humpty Dumpty back together physically. We can get them compensation, and we can make it better for the next person. And a lot of clients feel very invested in that. They care deeply. My clients care. Don't let this happen to anybody else.
Oh, my God. And it really is, of course, seeking justice, but making a difference from the future. Listen, I was in business, and I had a large hospitality facility. And even you have a lot of doors there, right? There's a lot of doors in this place, and you have, you know, security. And you can sit there and say, well, we need to put a security guard at that door. And well, why do we need to do that? There's nobody coming in that door until somebody gets in that door and something happens. And unfortunately, you know, that's the way of the world in many places. Common sense, at least at the beginning, and then there are people who pay for that situation dearly. And I'm so thankful that we have great attorneys like yourself and the firm that bring justice. Paula, workers' compensation, an area that I am passionate about, being a labor guy and having done injured workers programs for individuals that have worked for companies for decades and have never missed a day's work, but something happens on a Friday, they pull their back out. It's not a seemingly catastrophic injury, but they're going to suck it up for the boss and the company, and see how they feel on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
happens all the time.
Yeah, and then over the weekend, on, you know, they maybe lay down and take a very cautious weekend where they don't. Monday they come in, they're hurting worse. It didn't get better. They don't get a trophy. There's no big ceremony for their dedication. Sometimes that gets even used against them.
It absolutely does. I just had a mediation this morning where that happened. My guy had an accident on a Friday, had an extruded disc. That's the diagnosis. And over the weekend, just took it easy. Sunday, could not get out of bed. Even their own doctor agreed with the diagnosis, but the defense attorney was taking the position that he didn't hurt himself on Friday because he only had the really bad pain Sunday when he got up. And it you know, took a toll because my guy has been out of work, no money, can't stay out of work for another 9 months until the judge makes a decision. So we did settle the case. We got decent number, but it wasn't what he should have got, in my mind.
And so, you know, people get confused. Obviously, they've dedicated their whole lives to companies. I'm a labor guy, so a lot of labor guys are making good money. They don't want to be out. I've seen one guy, and by the way, we in my union, Ironworkers Union, we have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of signatory contractors. So we're in a good situation, right? Whereas if you're in the SEPTA union, TW 234, you only have one. Now your whole career is on the line. You get fired on that, you know, and something happens, they get paid. But no, I had an iron worker call me, just the injured worker, and he said, I got injured on a job. It was a 2-week job. I'm already done the job. He didn't, you know, in other words, he's already back at the home, but he didn't want to make waves. He didn't want to make waves, and he may never see that company again. So people want to work. They want to be back to work, okay? He said, listen, I think I'm just going to tell him it happened at home. I'm like, listen, brother, my suggestion to you was not to lie. No. Not to mention the fact is, because he didn't want to make waves, but, you know, what happens if it turns out to be a catastrophic injury? He just didn't know it. And next thing you know, there's no workers' compensation. It's not just about the injury. It's about your family, and it's about what – anyway, the point is it's a good example of how most people want to work and do those things. The last thing you want to do is get out of work, and yet they're still getting it put to them more often than not.
Well, the other risk that they run is because if they have personal insurance – and they're sent a questionnaire. Did this happen at work? Did it happen in a motor vehicle accident?
It's fraud.
Absolutely. So they have to tell the truth if it's a work injury and
take it
from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we're going to, by the way, we're going to get into third-party cases where Miriam's firm and our gracious guest's firm would work together, okay? But having said that, before we do, I want to talk we're coming off an election, and women's rights is such a big deal.
We've got two women here.
That's right. That's right. And Miriam and I were talking as we were getting off the elevator that we actually had. So I just did a show with Josh Shapiro, and it's going to actually air sometime next week. And we did a show several months back, but this particular show was before the 30 days, so we couldn't air it on this station. At the time. But having said that, there was so much on the line in the state. You were talking about, workers' rights. We're talking about women's rights and so many other things that were on the line. And one of the things with Roe versus Wade getting overturned, obviously it was a major eye-opener and made a lot of people rightfully nervous and all those things. Having said that, I had said to Miriam, and I thought this right from day one. I said, okay, watch what you wish for. We're talking about the other side there. And what do you mean by that? Well, now you're igniting the base. Now people that might, everybody's that in my movement is, obviously passionate about voting. But
well, young people, I think, is a perfect example, particularly in a midterm election. You didn't see young people coming out to vote. I mean, maybe you get them out for a presidential election, but they're not that motivated, I think, to go out and vote. And I think this really resonated with young people that we may not have seen come to the polls that had a reason now to show up and vote.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, okay, that people, I'm sure, okay, the people that – we're not, concerned with women's women's rights, and obviously the right to choose, and all those, things that are so important to all of us. Now we're engaged, Okay, I assume, like, getting out to vote, that, in my opinion, in a, you know, midterm, of course, guess what? I didn't think that was a problem. I said that to our, you know, on our labor show. Okay, same thing, except, by the way, you know, you're taking, you know, every woman's right to choose, you know, and you're putting it in the state's hands. Okay, guess what? I, you know, did a lot of people a lot of favors, because guess what? We're not letting that one get by.
That's right.
And you know, you talk about young people. Well, parents are talking to their kids now.
Yeah.
Okay, did you vote? Did you vote? And let me, and people talking.
And if this affects you, you have a stake in this. They, I think often young people felt disconnected to what's the stake in it for me. But now when you're talking about the right to choose and the control of your own body, I think it really ignited young voters to come out.
Absolutely. And what I love about the trial lawyers, and it's kind of like labor, okay? Years and years ago, I had a got called in by a number of doctors. This was six, 7 years ago. And they were talking about, they had legislation that they were getting beat up on. Okay, I had been doing labor for so many years, and I've been part of the movement, and my dad was a labor leader and all those things, so I'm engaged in the process. One of them, this is a nice group, and by the way, they're all good guys, but they were sitting around a table in Delaware County, and somebody says, well, we went into the state rep's office, and, you know, we waited for 2 hours, and an elderly lady walked in with an issue about a fence up the street. She could get in, we couldn't get in. And I, you know, well, they weren't active in the process as much as they should have been at the time. The trial lawyers are actively, you know, so just like labor. And what I love about that is people that aren't injured, who may, you know, who are, fortunately going to get injured and who don't know they need the rights. You guys are fighting for them right now.
And for labor, I've represented asbestos clients.
Oh,
I did too.
I've represented so many people, and probably some of my favorite clients ever were asbestos clients, because these are laborers. These was largely men that went to work to feed their families and were being secretly and quietly poisoned with asbestos that the asbestos manufacturers knew was causing cancer and mesothelioma. And I would meet these men in the worst time of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they were so decent and so gracious, and their families, and so overwhelmed that this is where they found themselves. And really, of just the most compelling client you could possibly have.
Yeah,
a lot of those people took the products, the refractory products, home.
Yes.
And insulated their garages.
Yes.
And
yes.
Remember?
Yeah. And they would say, we have ship workers and all kinds of guys in steel mills that said, well, we would have snowball fights with the fibers of asbestos. I mean, again, because they had no idea.
Well, it's interesting because I don't know if you know who Pat Iding is, but Pat Iding's a president of Philadelphia Council, AFL-CIO. So he was our co-host on the labor show. He still does a monthly, but he's retiring. And I was just good guy Danny Bowder taking over, but I'm sure Danny would say the same thing. No chance, no one could ever take Pat Iding's place. It just is incredible. Having said that, he was my good friend who I went to high school with, Steve Pettit, is the head of the Insulators Union now, Local 14. Do you know Steve?
No, well, Steve, I understand who he's representing.
So that's where Pat came from.
Yeah.
And we've done some shows on mesothelioma. I can say the word now,
yeah.
Right? I was tongue twisted on that, but we've done a lot of shows.
I've been around it for long enough that I can say it.
Yeah. Well, let me say this. Pat cannot get out of he can't get through a show without breaking down. Yeah. Why? Because Pat is the only living member of his apprentice program. And he's, you know, and it was a foreman. He took the union over, and then Steve Pettit took over for him. But, okay. So let's think about that for a second. Okay. You know, I've been doing the legal shows also for a long time, and why I think you guys are heroes in many ways. I'll say
not all heroes wear capes.
I got one for you. I got one for you. Two words: contingency fee.
Right.
Well, three words, contingency fee agreement. How can a human being walk into your office to listen? I don't know the fine. I'm not a finance guy. I don't have the big money that Drew Walker has. Okay. But he could actually balance the budget with a couple of days off of lunch, but that's not important. Right. But what I'm saying is, and this goes, you know, obviously for Miriam and for Paula, somebody walks in your office, they're badly injured, or their family member walks in or calls in, or either way, and there's no out-of-pocket cost for that.
I had a client that just came, very sad case with, it looks like the car failed. The car was sudden acceleration, and a mother killed and very badly injured stepfather for the person. And they're like, and I'm like, well, these are very expensive cases if, you know, once we get going, because you're suing a car, you know, it's complicated science and engineering. And they're like, looking like, listen,
we don't have the money.
There's no way, but this is my mother and this shouldn't have happened. I'm like, there is no out of pocket cost to you. And it gives somebody an opportunity that, let's face it, there's no way they'd ever have. You are not taking on a car manufacturer for a defective product without a contingency fee agreement with a lawyer.
Okay, and let's take it a step farther. You're going to pay, if there needs to be experts.
The cost.
Give me, obviously not the most, but you guys have invested in cases and in clients' cases. Mm-hmm. How extensive can they get?
Oh, in a products liability case, like a crashworthiness case, you can spend over $100,000, $200,000 if you're going to work that case up for trial. The amount of experts, remember, they have to test it. They have to find the defect. They have to prove the defect. You can spend a fortune, and it's a risk. It's a risk. Obviously, we're very careful in the cases
you've
that we take.
You've had the cases.
You have to. Not to mention the opposition that you're going to get. You know, car manufacturers do not want to make these cases legitimate. They're going to fight that all their might.
And think about the other side. And by the way, Miriam, I'm sure there's been more than, you know, a dozen, 20, 30 times where you've walked in with your client.
Just me and them.
That's right. You and them and the 10
and
corporate
the other
20 attorneys.
Lawyers,
right?
On the other side.
That's right. Right. They, you know, they think,
it's lonely. Right. It's definitely lonely at our table.
But I'm sure that a number of those defense attorneys looked over and went, crap. Yeah. Right. Because they know you're not backing down and you're in there. You're in it to win it and to get justice.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why I say, you know, you know, what you guys do is so incredible. I had an attorney say to me, he was running for judge, and he wanted to be a family court judge. And a lot of people say, it, you know, when an attorney hears you say that, they're like, oh, well,
why?
Right. What? Right. That's right. Well, we were doing a podcast the week before the election. And I couldn't put it on the radio because it was before the 30-day period. And so he said to me, well, I don't know. And he's the personal injury, but I think he did mostly Social Security. Either way, he was like, I'm not sure I feel real good about what I do. I said, are you crazy? I said, contingency fee, that's it. Right? I know. And then I went into the fact that, you know, all those things. And he said, I'm feeling a little taller today when I walk out. You know what I mean? So it's all really, really good stuff. One of the things I'd like to get into is cases where the personal injury and the workers' compensation firm work together on issues that we call them third party cases.
Well, I mean, there's a natural
synergy
between these cases because the kind of people that Paula represents, people that are hurt on the job, they can't sue their employer. They can only get what she's doing for them, which is their lost wages and medical bills. But if somebody else created the negligence or the defect or the dangerous circumstances that worker encounters other than the employer, then we call that the third party. And there's where the synergy is between us, because she can help that client get their lost wages, which they desperately need. As she just said, they can't stay out of work.
Right.
These people have to work. So the third party case is the future, but for the present, they need her. In the future, I can help them if we can find a third party whose conduct was responsible for the problem.
And so I want to give in layman's terms
who that would be. Right. I'll give you an example. Right now, somebody referred me, a workers' comp referred me a case where my client was working on 76. They were doing excavation work, you know, on right around here, 76, pretty dangerous place.
Yeah.
And they're working on the median. And there was a general contractor that had subbed him out. So he didn't work for the general. And there was a hole, an unguarded hole in the highway. And he didn't know it was there. And he took a very bad fall. And he is very, very badly injured. And the claim can't be against his employer because of workers' compensation in Pennsylvania. Doesn't permit that. And Paula can certainly speak to that. But that, you know, we want people suing their employers for their pain and suffering, just their lost wages and medical bills. But the general contractor who had a duty to make that site safe and didn't do it is the third party in our case. And that allows that client to get his medical bills, his lost wages, and his pain and suffering.
And so, Paul, when somebody comes in the office and they've never been through the process before, which I'm assuming is most people, and they, in many cases, when they try to navigate themselves, you know, because of that earlier example, what that you know, they've been with the company 10, 20 years, I'm going to do it themselves. And they get beat up, and now they walk into your office because
they need her.
They need you. And having said that, how many people don't have any idea about a third-party case, let alone their own injury case? And how often does that happen?
It happens quite often. And I have people come in and say, well, I don't want to sue my employer, so I have to explain the whole process of workers' comp. It's the exclusive remedy. Now, not all people have a third-party case, but certainly I've been doing this long enough that I pick right up if they do have a third-party case, and then I do refer them out to personal injury attorneys.
And what process, once you realize that they have one, how does that work?
I think usually the workers' comp lawyer can, like she says, she can recognize. So I think it's the injured worker who doesn't realize it, right?
Correct.
The injured worker is the person who, they're doing their job, they're hurt, they don't know what relief they're entitled to, and they don't recognize because it's kind of invisible to them, right? They're coming there to work for their boss, and they don't recognize that there may be another entity. If it's a machine, who made the machine that didn't have the guard that the worker got hurt? So that's a third party. If it's a subcontractor and a general contractor, what duties did the general contractor have that they didn't fulfill that created danger and the worker got hurt? So there's a lot of situations that it's invisible to the worker, but the lawyers, because you know we've been around it, we can see, hey, there might be somebody who failed to do something that caused this hazard, that they should be responsible for it.
And when somebody comes in, what's the process of investigating that or understanding that sometimes it's not quite that, you know, simple. Like in
subtle.
Other words,
it can be subtle. Yeah.
At what point do you how do you investigate it to see, you know, the big picture?
Well, I sit down with the client and I ask them to explain exactly what happened, the individuals involved, you know, the equipment, all aspects of how they were injured. And a question that I get a lot, unfortunately people don't have third-party cases, is especially when we go to settle their case, they don't understand that they cannot get pain and suffering. And I explained that, you know, workers' comp is a stopgap remedy. It's only there for the wage loss and the medical, and there's no pain and suffering in workers' comp.
So you have, with a third-party case, those things all come
suffering,
in play.
Yes, and yes. I think this is a difficult concept for clients to understand. So just to be really clear, right, that you, when somebody gets injured while they're working, they have all kinds of different problems that arise, right? They have, I can't work anymore, so I don't have my wages. Well, that's a huge problem. They have medical bills that are piling up. So the law says, all right, well, workers' compensation, because we don't want, you know, we recognize people need immediate help, and often the employer is not going to step up and do the right thing, and they need Paula because she'll make them do the right thing. But that doesn't address that. What if you're left with all these you have your immediate pain and residual pain. You've got problems that are not going away. You've had surgery. You're never going to be the same. So you can't get that from comp.
And people
don't get it.
And what's interesting is that's why, you know, you go to an arthritis doctor for arthritis. And you go to, you know, if you need a knee repaired, you know, you go to an ortho. I say that because if you don't go to, for example, if they don't walk into your office first, Miriam, if you don't go to a workers' comp, if you just go to a regular general practice guy or something like that who doesn't have knowledge.
Right, who won't even detect it.
You know, they may not even detect or even ask those questions. I can probably imagine, you know, and that could cost somebody a big part of the rest of their life.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, and worst of all is the employers have these panel doctors who work for the employers, and a lot of times they just brush the people off and say there's nothing wrong, go back to work, when really they should have a CAT scan, an MRI, whatever the case may be. But they don't take care of these people. And the longer they have this injury, the worse it can get.
All right, so let's do this. Let's take a short break, okay, and then we'll come back and we'll continue this conversation on Taking Charge with Paul Robinson and Miriam Barish after the break.
Suffering a work injury can be a debilitating experience. Trying to navigate the workers' compensation system and process on your own can make it even worse. From the point of injury to the culmination of your claim and everything in between, certified workers' compensation attorney and specialist Paula Robinson will handle every facet of your workers' compensation matter to ensure that you get the representation and results you need in the face of a system that often treats injured workers like they don't matter. If you get injured on the job, call workers' compensation attorney Paula Robinson of Robinson Law at 215-530-7166 or go to robinsonlawyer.com. That's Robinson, LWYR.com, and get the support, the representation, and results you need to get back on your feet again.
If you came across a child struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? By their clothes, their age, the way they speak? Would you recognize a 13-year-old boy who gets into fights at school,
not because he's a boy, but because he's hungry?
Or a 2-year-old girl who cries all night,
not because she's sick, but because she went to bed without enough to eat?
Or maybe a 9-year-old boy who hopes a friend invites him to a sleepover,
not for fun, just so he can have dinner?
Or a 15-year-old girl who goes for walks over lunch
so her friends won't know she doesn't have anything to eat?
I am the 1 in 7 American children who struggle with hunger. Kids you pass by every day but never knew were hungry. I am Child Hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America, 200 Food Banks Strong.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Taking Charge with Paul Robinson. We've got a fantastic show. Miriam Barish of Anna Paul Weiss is Paula's guest. Shout out to Drew Walker and TJ for making it happen. Of course, here on WWDB Talk 860, we're talking third-party cases where a work injury turns into an actual lawsuit. People are always, most people are conscious of, you mentioned, Miriam, they don't want to sue their employer. No one wants to sue their employer, but the important part is, especially when you get injured on a job, you're not suing your employer, okay? You're not. And by the way, as a third-party case, you're clearly not suing your employer. You're not allowed to sue your employer except in very, very limited cases, but you're not. You have workers' comp insurance. Talk about that, Paul, in regards to that conversation where people say they don't want to do that. That's why you're required in the state of Pennsylvania,
right,
or I should be getting a little call from the attorney general to have workers' comp insurance, if you would.
Yeah, so I explained to them that they absolutely can't sue the employer. It's just like having car insurance. Their employer has to have this insurance. If you have an injury, you submit the claim to the insurance, and the insurance should take care of it. And if it doesn't, then I have to step in and file the necessary petitions.
And if they don't have insurance, isn't there some kind of a fund?
The Uninsured Guarantee Fund, that came out probably about 12 years ago. And they've gone through a lot of changes.
They're giving out money like it's candy, right?
No, I'm just kidding. And unfortunately, the employers that don't have workers' comp are the ones that hire the Hispanics, the minorities. In a lot of cases, they have them doing, work on tall buildings, very dangerous work.
Oh yeah,
and they have catastrophic injuries, and then when they go to file a claim, there's no insurance.
So you're, in a sense, talking about somebody who may be undocumented, who's come in and is being taken advantage of.
Yes.
And you know,
can I just say
one
thing?
Please.
So people don't recognize this. Whether somebody is a citizen or not and has, you know, the right visa or papers that allows them to be here, if somebody is hurt, they can file a civil lawsuit whether or not they're a citizen. They are not prohibited from doing that because they are not a citizen. And that is definitely a myth that people operate under.
Oh, no
question. Well, for workers' comp, if you're undocumented, you cannot get wage loss benefits. You can only get medical.
Okay.
So Third party, you can get.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And but you mentioned something, and it does fall over in the labor world where it's so horrible. An immigration attorney, immigration discussion, which I've had hundreds of times, where, you know, you have predatorial employers that are, you know, actually market to individuals, pick them up over at the Home Depot and take them for, you know, and they get on this job into a back alley, in the back alley, and the scaffolding's shaking back and forth. Next thing you know, somebody gets injured.
Yeah.
You know,
and
one of these days, I'm going to have a show. We'll do a show, Paula, on the actual conditions where somebody can sue their employer. That's a different ballgame.
When they're not barred because it's so egregious.
But those are the types of cases that you're talking about, Miriam,
yeah.
where
terrible conditions.
Terrible conditions. But there still can be a third party.
Absolutely,
situation.
There can be. Which I mean, it seems counterintuitive. I think a lot of people think, well, hey, if you don't have the appropriate papers that you're being recognized to be here legally, you don't have legal rights. It's not true. That's not true. You cannot hurt put a worker in a dangerous situation. They get hurt and then say, oh, sorry, Charlie.
Because you know they're not calling OSHA if they're up on
exactly.
a scaffold.
No,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, of course not, because they know they're undocumented.
Exactly.
I had a situation where we had the head of Philipposh. Philipposh is the union nonprofit that handles work safety issues. They work along with OSHA. And I'm trying to... Barbara Rocky, and she outside her backyard. She was the president of. She's retired now, but it was a similar situation where these individuals were on a scaffold. There was no X bridge on. It was a horrible situation, and she went out and raised heck, holy heck. The workers were actually happy.
Sure.
Okay. The company got nervous quickly,
yeah.
But this happens. This happens a lot, and then. They're afraid to call and all this, but it still creates a third party situation. And you know, where let's talk about the importance and that's information that people should know. Obviously, that there are people that are contributing into those immigration situations, and in some cases, encourage them because they had a brother that worked and come on over from another country. Don't worry about it. Having said that. When we talk about third-party cases, let's talk about the communication between the workers' comp and the personal injury, attorney. And I say that because, you know, I'm very fortunate to get to meet the best of the best on the program, right? And we have great attorneys. You can get here because, you know, what I really admire about individuals like yourself, and I was thinking about it yesterday, is how you've been doing it so long and you're as passionate today as you were 15 years ago, okay? And that is such a big deal. I wonder sometimes because, you know, you're doing it 25 years and you get up in the morning like you're just starting, right? That's really important because, as we all know, some of the biggest complaints about attorneys from clients are they can never get in touch with their attorneys. That doesn't happen in this room. But point is, that same communication and dedication counts when two attorneys are working together. How do the let's go with a work injury that's also a personal injury case. Talk about the process and at the same time where each side can affect the other and the importance of communications. Paul, you want to jump in first?
Yeah, sure. It's very important to share information and the documents. Like if you have a police report from a motor vehicle accident, that PI attorney has to have that, plus all the medical records. They need to understand what happened to the individual, where they treated. They need those records. If I take any depositions, they need to have those depositions. They need to have the independent medical examination report. And if it gets that far, that doctor's deposition, they need everything that I need and more for them.
And often, you know what, the workers' comp lawyer often has that I'm really interested in is an incident report. What, whoever, because they're going to be the first people on the scene at a work-related accident is going to be somebody from the employer. So what was there when they got there? What were the findings? What was the information? And that's usually in a workers' comp file that can be really useful to the third-party case.
And when you talk about settlements, okay, and we'll get into subrogation, but how does one side impact the other side? In other words, why does the left hand need to know what the right hand's doing? And I've heard some attorneys say, well, you know, if we're not working obviously in conjunction or at least not in knowledge and communicating back and forth, something the other side, you know, the work comp attorney does can really impact the person injury.
Like I said, the comp, usually the employer, they've done interviews. They've employed, you know, they've interviewed the employees that might have been there when the incident occurred who might be eyewitnesses. That could just be such a useful amount of information that comes from comp that we don't necessarily have. So, you know, the comp attorney, we have a common client and a common interest. And working together is really useful for all concerned.
Well,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to, you mentioned the subrogation. So when workers' comp pays out any money, medical and wage loss, then they have a subrogation lien. It's a right that they have. So when the injured worker files a third-party suit and they either get an award or a settlement, they can't double dip. So workers' comp is entitled to a subrogation lien of the amount of money that they've paid. And there's a third-party settlement agreement that gets a little complicated, but we figure out how much the workers' comp carrier is entitled to get back. And sometimes they'll waive part of that lien to get the third party settled.
So meaning, bottom line is they get paid in comp, and then comp gets some of it back.
And that's one of the only times where all of a sudden the work comp provider, the insurance companies, wants to be your friend, right?
Yes.
They get real friendly. Right.
I've heard the same thing, go ahead.
Well, and also, too, because with the lien, like Paula was just talking about, meaning from the client's perspective, comp paid your medical bills, your wages, and that would just go by the wayside if there's no third-party case. It goes away. You'll never hear of it again. But if you have a claim for your pain and suffering through a lawyer like myself, the lien lives on, and it comes into my case. And like Paula said, often they'll work with us, and we can get it reduced to some extent. And then I'm kind of working for the comp carrier, the insurance company for comp. They're my client, right? Because I'm going to protect their lien. And what that means is I'm going to make sure that lien gets resolved and paid back, hopefully in a reduced form, from the money that I can accomplish in the third-party case by verdict or settlement.
Talk about preparing your clients really from day one, because an injury can be debilitating in so many different ways. And the one, aside from physically, emotionally, and these cases, and Paul, you and I have talked about workers' comp and how people have, obviously, you mentioned a little, when we first started the show, it can be 9 months to get the comp back, okay? If and it's a tragedy of epic proportions. You talk about politics, we should be, you know, on our legislators for that ridiculousness. But, I'll say this, Miriam, setting expectations for somebody.
Very important.
At the beginning. And I don't mean financial expectations where,
I think it's everything. I mean, I think, clients, I was just saying this to one of my partners this morning. Somebody was talking about the value of a case and what the client was told. And I'm like, I don't do that.
You're
I'm not going to do that.
You can't.
Right.
You're just getting into the case.
Exactly.
There's no way.
Well, that's what I meant.
There's no way.
But that's not what I meant by expectations.
That's one piece of the puzzle. The other thing is, I think clients have to recognize that it's a process. This is a process. And they're really, unfortunately, it's a very time-consuming process. It will never move as quickly as they want it to. It's just this is where we find ourselves. I mean, it takes time. The court systems, you know, and there's going to be opposition. There's a lot in your case and in my case. There's going to be opposition to every move we make.
And setting them people up.
From the beginning.
Because, like I said, they're physically in bad shape and emotionally just with the injuries. But then the ebbs and flows of a normal case with the defense and all those things.
And they're going to get beat up. It's so sad. You know, I'm sure Paula sees this too. Here, you know, you said your client, they don't want to make a claim and they wanted to nurse it over the weekend and hope. And my clients too. Why didn't you go to the hospital, Ray? I thought I'd shake it off. I hoped I'd shake it off.
Yeah.
And then that's used against them at their deposition. Oh, well, you didn't go right to the emergency room. I didn't understand the extent of my injuries. I mean, so clients, unfortunately, their human nature is to want it to go away, to want it to get better, to not want to sue their employer, to not. I have clients say to me all the time, I don't sue people. Yeah. I'm like, I understand. But, you know, while you might have some discomfort with this, you've suffered a terrible injury. Somebody else created the problem, and but for that negligence or recklessness, you wouldn't be in this situation. And it's all that you've got left because I can't bring back your pre-injury state. Your only remedy now is compensation, and let's make it a safer place.
Yeah, because for a million reasons that person may not realize that they don't. People also don't realize that I'll just give it an example of a car accident. That the protocols from the insurance company start immediately. How you feeling?
Yeah.
I mean, literally 30 minutes afterwards, that's the call. Well, I'll tell you how I'm feeling. I feel pretty good. I mean, you know, next day, my wife is a great example. When we were kids, we were making a turn at Frankfurt and Princeton. I'll never forget. We're in the left hand. It was a left hand. And the light, the regular traffic light turned green. But our arrow was still. And the guy behind us must have been looking at the pretty girl next to him on the right because he took right off with the traffic hit. It didn't look like a bad injury, right? I mean, she not only and we went to the hospital, whatever. She got that disc taken out that it exploded a year later. And for the entire, we were kids, so we didn't really know the difference. She got enough to fix a car or whatever. But my point is, she wasn't anywhere near aware of what was going on. We didn't even file suit. Like I didn't. We were kids. We didn't know what our rights were. But the bottom line is, you meet my wife today. She's got a massive scar on her neck because they go in through the front.
Yeah.
A lot of times. So a lot of people don't know. That's why I said.
I don't know. You don't know what you don't know.
That's right. And that's why I said, seemingly, at the beginning, seemingly a catastrophic injury. People don't like it. A building doesn't have to fall on you, or a car doesn't have to, you know, T-bone you for you to have catastrophic injuries that never recover. Now, my point to that is this. 6 months down the road when that person, if God forbid, that person is unlucky as my wife, and it was seemingly a fender bender, okay, I saw it coming. Now, when you get tensed up, it says
it worse. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, my wife, she must have tensed up and bang. It wasn't like if you drop by it, like a broken light or something like that. And I guess I had to get my fender repaired, but it didn't seem like it. But yet people don't know. The reason I brought up the communication thing earlier was because the importance of getting good attorneys, okay, and people who are passionate about what they do is – regular people, you know, if you hear the common, like, I can't get in touch with my attorney. It's as important for attorneys like both of yourselves to be communicating back. It's the same standard, right? I mean, in other words, I'm sure that on both sides, you've walked into situations where you didn't know the workers' comp attorney, Miriam, or and Paul, you didn't know the PI attorney, and you're not getting calls back. And next thing you know, that relationship and that quality of attorneys that you're working with are just as important for the two of you.
Yeah, absolutely. And really, starting with the comp, if the comp attorney is the first person to encounter somebody who's injured on the job, their skill set is critical because, like she said, she's got to be a good detective, right? I mean, if you go into a general practitioner's office, not in any way to disparage a general practitioner.
But we're a bunch of crumb bumps. No, I'm joking. I'm joking.
Somebody with a more sophisticated experience is going to recognize not only Mr. Client, do you have a workers' compensation claim? There's a third party case here because I can't get to your pain and suffering. But I think that this is the person responsible is another entity. It's not your employer. And you can get made, you know, compensation from a third party entity. But if she doesn't, you know, if they don't go to a comp attorney like Paula and somebody doesn't tease that out, it doesn't happen.
Yeah, no yeah, question.
That's right.
And so have you ever run into a situation where you had no, like somebody else picked an attorney, at, you know, maybe a PI attorney, and you can't get in touch with them and you're thinking to yourself, and you kind of probably can't tell the, you're not trying to talk bad about the other attorney, but you're saying, well, you know, we're going to have a problem here if
yeah,
we don't.
Yeah.
That's important, right?
I mean, you're both working for the same client. You both owe a duty to that client. And that does mean communicating between the two of you.
Well,
and helping each other.
Yes.
I mean, we can help each other. And I'm sure she can see, you know, not to toot the horn of Anna Paul Weiss, but we will get, you know, put the most resources towards developing the case to its fullest potential, as we talked about, with the experts that are needed. And again, if you're not with the right firm and they don't have the resources to do that,
that's
you're
right,
going to be cheated of that.
Well, talk about, we have 4 minutes left. But talk about the resources.
Resources is huge. Our firm, we are very fortunate. We've been very successful for doing really good work. And through that, we are able, we have the resources, meaning we have the money that it takes. When we say we need this expert to fully develop this case, we'll write the check. That's it. When we believe in the case, we never say, I don't think we're going to get that expert. It's kind of pricey. It doesn't work that way.
No.
If that's what the case needs and we've committed to the case, we're going to do it. So our decisions are made based on what's best for the case, how we can maximize the recovery for the clients. And unfortunately, not all law firms are created equal. Let's face it. If
they can't.
Talk about that, Paul, especially when you're referring a client to somebody and knowing that firm is going to be able to go the distance.
Well, that's very important. I wouldn't refer a claimant to any firm that I didn't think was up to the job and had the resources. And in comp, some of my cases, I have to depose 3-4 doctors because there's different injuries. And you can't rely on one doctor to be able to give competent testimony as to a diagnosis. If they've had a concussion and they're having eye problems, I've had to depose eye doctors, neurologists, orthopedics, all in one case. So I have to make sure that I can do that, and I
fund
can
it.
Do it.
And I'll say this, Miriam. One of the things that, you know, regular slugs like myself are out there. You get in a car accident, or you she'll slip and fall, or catastrophic. I'm not, thinking about the resources,
it doesn't occur to you.
Well, of course I'm not, because I'm like, okay, why would it?
Right.
So having said, and I point that out, it's so important. You mentioned the word resources. I'm like, okay. Having said that, you're like, you know, I thought I was going to Bob's sister's, buddy and you know, whatever. I'm just saying, you know, because I don't know. A lawyer's a lawyer, right? No, not at all.
That's right. It's resources. It's also the experience of the attorney. We've seen such new, I have encountered, I mean, I'm willing to take on difficult challenges and be creative in finding solutions for clients. Where you need resources and you need to really be creative about what went wrong here and how can we address it.
And also having an experienced team around you.
Absolutely.
I mean, you've got a great team of attorneys there.
You don't just have my brilliance.
Well,
by the way,
it's all we really need. And if we could just get you some help from the other.
Too.
But having said that, you have
everybody in our firm, right? So we conference cases. So you're getting the wisdom, the collective wisdom of all of us.
Absolutely. Such a big deal, being able to round table things.
Makes
especially when
difference.
There's, like Paula and you said, Miriam, of course, any great attorney is going to tell you, we can't tell you what a settlement's going to be and all that, but you have to be good enough to know that if you're going to take this case, the client's not going to suffer for 2 years, go through all this, and you know, there's no guarantees, even though everybody's track record's there, but that there's a case there at the end.
Absolutely.
Where it's not $150 and that yeah. person, you know, so there's so many factors, the costs and all those things. Let's do this. What do we got, TJ? We got a minute. Okay. Miriam, if you would, contact information for yourself at the firm.
So it's Miriam Barish, B-A-R-I-S-H, at Annapol Weiss, 215-790-4571.
Fantastic. Paula Robinson?
Paula Robinson, Robinson Law. My phone number is 215-530-7166.
Awesome. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Taking Charge with Paula Robinson. I want to thank Miriam Barish. Ivana Paul Weiss, fantastic broadcast.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Earned so much. Of course, we want to thank Drew Walker for making it happen. TJ in the producer's room. On behalf of everybody on the broadcast, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.